is very often used to claim that if we take this action, we will have stepped onto a slippery slope and will slide all the way into the bottom.
Well, the company we both worked for at one time had that problem. 40% of the revenue came from one customer, and then they switched technologies.
From Orion X, this is the Marketing Podcast. Marketing has transformed in significant ways. More technology, more data, more social, more blending of arts and sciences, more integrated with every other function, and ultimately, more critical to the organization. Join Shaheen Khan and Doug Garnett as they discuss news and happenings in the world of marketing, from the boardroom to customer programs.
Hi, everybody. Marketing Podcast, episode number 48. This is Shaheen Khan with Doug Garnett. How are you, Doug?
I'm doing well.
All right. I'm delighted we managed to finally press the record button here after.
Maybe listeners should know we've just spent 4 days mulling over the topics here.
We should probably record the whole thing and put that up. Sure. Anyway, so I understand we have a cartoon and there is an Oon in the cart.
There is an Oon in the cart. And this Oon is rather sketchy from a guy named Will Santino. And what it shows is it shows a straw man walking a red herring up a slippery slope on his way to the comment section.
There you go.
And of course, there's a man made out of straw on a hill walking a red herring in the cartoon, if you want to see the visuals. So
it's a very literal depiction of that statement.
It is, but where else can you get the most common approaches used in comment sections to make them thoroughly worthless?
Yes. So I think you nailed what this cartoon is all about, because I saw that and I'm like, what this even means? You said, let me define what these words are.
All right. Yeah. So yes, I'm geeky enough that I ran off and found the definition. So just to be really clear, because I think like we all have these guesses or hunches or sense of the definitions, but technically a red herring is a clue or piece of information that is intended to be misleading or distracting.
Yeah.
So they're thrown out there to get us off the topic and lead us into other discussion. So anything to take us away from talking about what's important. Them's a red herring.
No wonder it's taken hold in office jargon.
Part of the problem I have with these is that they're all legitimate manipulation approaches. On the other hand, the new manipulation is to tell people that's a red herring, whether it is or not. So they all get weaponized as a way to distract from the conversation. So it's less about red herrings. What I've seen that a lot, people accusing other people of bias. Well, you have a bias here, but they don't. They're just observing what they observe, and you think, yeah.
Also, bias by itself is not a bad thing. Like if you have a bias for the truth,
yeah,
or bias for being, you know, for doing the right thing, those are good biases.
Well, I wrote a blog post about how there's some discussion that biases may have evolved humanly to help groups make decisions. Because if you get 10 people together and we all have a bias one way or another, we're going to hash it out. And likely get to a clearer understanding of something. But there you go. There's the big theory of the day. So,
all right. And the slippery slope?
The slippery slope is a course of action that seems to lead inevitably from one action or a result with an unintended consequence. Now, I'm not in love with that definition. So let me tell you what a slippery slope is usually used as. In legal worlds, it's very often used to claim that if we take this action, we will have stepped onto a slippery slope and will slide all the way into the bottom. Thus, you get claims like, if we legalize marijuana, then babies will be taking heroin.
Right.
And yes, there's quite a slope between those two. I'm not sure it's nearly as slippery as someone might argue.
But the assumption is that it's over. Like the first inch that you give up, the whole war is lost, right?
Yeah, fundamentally, it's the give an inch, take a mile. Yeah. It's what people fear with it. And so it's a very effective argument, or not effective, but it's used in politics all the time where it's effective with certain people and people can win their point using it. And they're sometimes hard to argue against.
Excellent. Well, we had another piece of news on it as a quick mention. And
but are
it
we going to forget the straw man?
Oh, you're right. Straw man. Go for it.
Straw man's my favorite because I'm periodically accused of this.
And it
usually
isn't just
it's in the terms of
man of...
You set up a straw man to knock him down, right?
Ah.
So it's an intentionally misrepresented proposition set up because it's a lot easier to argue against your narrowly defined proposition was clearly wrong than to respond to your opponent's real argument. So it's a way to say, oh, well, and then you set up a straw man, you knock him down. And in so doing, everybody around you believes the opponent has been vanquished. Meanwhile, the opponent's over there saying, but wait a minute. That's not what I said at all.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a bit of a mischaracterization.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And all these, we see them in comment sections all the time. And you're free to add your favorite ones to the comment sections on our tweets.
That's right. So now, we did have a quick piece of news this past week about the imminent demise of Tupperware.
Yeah, it's funny. We've been talking about these specific companies, and then all of a sudden a bunch of news came out for these. So Tupperware has filed for bankruptcy, and I don't know too much about whether they're, what degree they're going to be able to reorganize, but they filed for bankruptcy. We talked about them, I think, about a year ago, and they had a big program trying to dig themselves out of the deep where they were going to appeal to younger customers, the ultimate Hail Mary pass in consumer marketing. Oh, well, we'll go younger. Apparently, whatever they didn't work well enough, and I'm not sure it could have, but it didn't work well enough. The real truth, though, came out from somebody on Instagram who suggested that, and this is the headline, I'm going to read it literally, Tupperware files for bankruptcy after being unable to find a single fucking lid for the 10 million plastic containers in their warehouse.
So. Oh, the lid problem is global and rampant. Everybody has a lid problem. And I don't know why they don't sell the lid by itself. They should.
Yeah, the internet has been alive with Tupperware memes about lids this week. So
yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
I mean, honestly, it's sad because they're an old brand, and I tend to get fond of old brands, and I wish that they had a way to find success.
Well, I thought you might suggest that they go direct to consumer and digital subscription.
Rent your Tupperware. Oh, I like that one. Yeah, rent your Tupperware. What do you think? Are we anywhere?
The Uber of Tupperware.
Shaheen, clearly you've been reading business plans this week in the Silicon Valley.
That's right. That's right.
We're going to be the Uber of nose hair scissors. Okay. Huh.
On demand.
Yeah, really?
Well, and the company down the street from you, Nike, has a new CEO.
Yeah, we're hitting these things right on the head. So yeah, Nike now has a new CEO. The former CEO stepped down. I think we could probably suggest was summarily fired, although I do feel sorry for him. Failure's never fun. But his errors were serious. So anyway, they said he had a rocky tenure. I think that's saying it. And they're going to replace him, at least for the moment, with a guy named Elliot Hill, who is a retired Nike employee. And had worked at Nike for, not for a long time, but for several years. And apparently he has a sense of the Nike business. And I think we should hope that does well for Nike, because I think clearly Donahoe didn't. Some of the stuff that came out, and it's not in the article we looked at, but after the fact, is Donahoe actually had an eBay background.
Yes.
And came out of Bain. And a whole bunch of things that suggest this guy's not ready for prime time in a massive consumer goods operation, and especially fashion oriented. So some things begin to really add up, like his obsession with direct-to-consumer from having spent too much
yes. time. Yes, well, I think digital is just too infatuating for many people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there are right ways and wrong ways of doing it, of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, another relatively new CEO, now we're going north from Portland to yes. Seattle, is Starbucks.
They're all on the West Coast, although I think Tupperware was in the Midwest somewhere.
I imagine, yeah. Yeah, but, sounds like a heartland yeah. kind of a company.
So the new CEO at Starbucks, Brian Nichol, has been there a week. So now it's time to proclaim whether he's personifies perfection or is going to fail completely. No, I'm just kidding. Right? Isn't that what analysts all do?
Yeah, of course.
He's been there for a week. He's going to fail. But at the end of his first week, he published a letter, a message from Brian, titled Back to Starbucks. And it's an interesting read. I always find these things interesting to look at because they're a CEO attempting both to be CEO and say the right things for the public, but also they only are useful if he indicates something that has meaning. And this one seems to have some meaning. What were your thoughts? Because you read through it and you had some very immediate reaction.
Yeah. So in general, I liked it. And we discussed him a couple of episodes ago and we yep. were both pretty positive about his background and the promise that he would bring to the company. And we all agreed that the company does have issues that need to be addressed. So I thought putting out the letter like this so quickly after he's been in the saddle is really nice. Mm-hmm. And the letter itself is quite nice. Now, before I go on to praise it, I did want to just like point out something that bugged me a little bit, and that was who it was addressed to. It was an open letter for all partners, customers, and stakeholders. And I had forgotten that in the parlance of Starbucks, the employees are referred to as partners. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that kind of just doesn't make sense to me.
I think actually it may have made sense back in the beginning when they were really involved. But through the years, you look at the union problems and employee dissatisfaction, it's clear that employees are not feeling very partnerly. And so I don't like that because it does have this sense of doublespeak about it. And yes, that's the formal name at Starbucks for people, but I think that there's a kind of a doublespeak about it, and that's not a good thing. People are sensitive to that.
Yeah, and then I had a similar reaction to stakeholders. Mm-hmm. Is that really shareholders, or are we really talking about broader set of constituencies? And if so, then maybe customers and partners would also be stakeholders?
Well, that's what's
a little bit semantically unclear, but
you've hit the one of the bureaucratic words I hate the most these days, which is stakeholder. And I think it was started to diminish shareholders' domination, I think, because there are other people who have a stake in a company other than shareholders. And the truth is, employees invest in their companies. They're investing part of their life in a customer, in a company, part of their career. Doesn't mean that they, I don't want to get too simplistic about that, but they are investing in the company. So I like the idea of saying, well, it's not just shareholders. On the other hand, far too often I've found stakeholder as the wedge to open the door for anybody to bitch about anything. And a lot of meddling happens when somebody raises their hand and says, but wait, I'm a stakeholder here. And they step into the room and upend what was very positive progress because they want to put their stamp on it. So I'm not a fan of the term stakeholder. And in fact, I think here, I'm not sure why he would have addressed it to stakeholders. I think given the topic of the letter to address it to partners and customers alone might have been exactly the right thing to do, because that's the relationship that matters most within Starbucks and where there have been problems. Yeah. So I think that would have been smart to leave stakeholders off of it.
So with that nitpicked, I liked the letter. I thought Back to Starbucks is a really nice title. Mm-hmm. It hits the right vibes and it even is valid. And then when you read it, he hits on a lot of all the right things, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought he did. I especially was pleased that there's no magic big plan noted in it, right? I think that CEOs, when they come into a company, often feel they have to announce magic plans that are going to make everybody excited. And a lot of companies just need somebody with a firm hand at the helm who knows what they're doing. And that guides, in my book, I talk about those, the accumulated impact of millions of tiny decisions. And in fact, Starbucks benefited from that initially when baristas were so important to helping people embrace the coffee that was being offered at the stores. And baristas helped people learn what new things were and figure out what they wanted. And those little tiny interactions are what built Starbucks. So there are millions of small things can add up to very significant change. Mm-hmm. So I was pleased that he didn't go off after any single big idea.
Yeah. So the letter reads well. It hits a lot of the places where you expect it to hit. Mm-hmm. And then he talks about his initial focus being four key areas, baristas, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. He talks about getting the morning right, reestablishing Starbucks as the community coffee house, which is really good, like stay a while and be that third place that for a while the company was leading with. Mm-hmm. And then finally, which I thought was very interesting, was telling our story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought those were all good. I certainly feel that like reestablishing the community coffee house, somehow the designs that have been built in Portland over the last 2 years feel harsh and unwelcoming. Mm-hmm. They have tended to remove tables rather than embrace people staying. And I don't know what that was all about, but hopefully he can affect that. The story question was really fascinating to me because initially, when you raised that as striking you important, I thought, oh, no. But the more I think about it, the story of Starbucks is quite clouded. It's been clouded by a lot of different kinds of competitors. It's been clouded by McDonald's and Dunkin' Donuts making drip coffees and trying to appeal to certain people who like those. And it's been clouded by union problems. I mean, the dissatisfaction of their frontline staff is a problem for Starbucks. It's going to keep people from trusting any story about the company doing good things or making good coffee or anything like that.
Yeah, I thought it was very significant because I think over the years, Starbucks has ceded the high-end coffee status to others, maybe smaller players, but those who have made it more of a point to emphasize. And they have their reserve roasts that he mentions in the letter. Some of those are quite fantastic, really world-class, but they don't really get credit for good quality coffee anymore, even though that was their initial story. Is like, we'll bring good coffee to America. Like, you don't have to go to Italy to get a good coffee. We can have the espressos and we learn new vocabularies. People learn what a latte is. And all of that is really not associated with them anymore. So I think it was astute to point that out as something that needs to be done.
Well, and I think that the work with baristas is particularly important in that, because Howard Schultz in his book talks about how they couldn't use advertising. And I'd say this is a new product. All I work with is a new product. So when Starbucks hit the market, they had an entirely new product they were introducing, which is espresso-based drinks and stronger drip coffee, but mostly the espresso-based drinks. And advertising would not have delivered what they could deliver with baristas saying, well, hey, have you tried a cappuccino? Or in explaining what these things are and then talking about them and sharing a love of coffee with the customer who also is interested in these things and maybe surprised by the taste. And that communication was extraordinary. And that's the only way Starbucks built, was through those one-on-one engagements. And Schultz, Howard Schultz, who founded Starbucks, knew that and has talked about that. But I think that has gotten lost through time, that understanding.
Yeah. So then it's a good thing that the first item actually is baristas. Yeah.
Yes, I think so. I mean, but now this is a good start. Now we'll see how well he does weaving his way through the world from here. There's a quote I have in the book from Lee Iacocca suggesting that God is a good God because he doesn't let us know what's coming down the road. And Iacocca goes on to say, if I'd known what I was getting into when I went to Chrysler, I probably wouldn't have done it. But you just have to deal with things one day at a time.
He did have a few good quotes.
I think that one's particularly good because even in a job like this, you have a big company, you can't really predict what's going to happen as you go into this and try to make changes.
So another article you shared with me and we discussed a little bit was about affiliate marketing, which was a big deal. And so let's talk about that a bit.
Well, yeah, I thought we should get to it because I don't think we've actually talked literally or directly about affiliate marketing in the podcast. And yet it's an important question for anybody who is trying to thrive through online sales on their own or really leverage things online. So in what affiliate marketing means is you work out arrangements with websites as a company where for everybody they send you, whether it's for the lead or for the sales close, they get some kind of money. And you work out a deal where they get a compensation for having sent you somebody that converted, or a smaller compensation just for everybody they send to. And affiliate marketing programs have been around for a long time. They first hit my radar in some articles about Caspar, the bed people, the mattress people, because there were affiliate people, I believe, earning $300,000 a month from the leads they were sending. It was a shocking amount of money.
Wow.
And it also led to some pretty ugly wars around Caspar at the time with who are you going to promote and things like that. So where there's that size of money, there's also greed and malfeasance. And it was tricky.
Yeah. So I don't know what I feel about affiliate marketing. I believe there are occasions where it is a very good thing. Because if you have standardized on a particular tool to help your clients and the clients are going to end up with that tool as a result, then it makes sense that you're bringing business to a company and it makes sense that they would compensate you somehow. But I feel like if that becomes your business, you're just going to pick the tool that has the best commission structure and not the tool that you actually would go for. So if it happens organically, I'm really good with it, if it becomes too much of a conscious thing, then I feel like you're not giving me the best tool that you otherwise would have.
I agree with that. And I think it also, a result of that is it's one of the things that has really cluttered Google search. That if you take, for example, take a health issue, maybe something about your knees, and you go do a search on it, the cacophony you get presented is really miserable and often can be 3 or 4 pages before you get to anything useful. Because there's all these people offering heal quickly gimmicks and all kinds of things. Now, of course, fortunately, a lot of like WebMD and the like get prioritized pretty high. But once you're past them, you're into a wasteland of affiliate sites who are trying to get paid. And that I find is a downside to the whole web. It's a classic example of one of those problems of the common, that those people are abusing web search, but they never pay the price for having abused it. So they just keep doing it and are going to step away from it. Another topic on the affiliates that's intriguing is this question of the legitimacy or authenticity of what they say.
Yes.
And I think I noticed that I've gotten very sensitive when I look at websites to whether it feels real. Because the affiliate sites, following what you said about them, as they learn that shelling for company X earns them a bunch of money, begin to write things that are less authentic, just because they know if they write it quickly and then they get paid for it, then they're making money and they're happy, as opposed to those that actually have a serious experience with the product and refer people to it because it makes sense.
Yeah, maybe that's a really good way of saying it, that you now are dealing with a company's agent seller rather than someone who has an implied endorsement of the product.
Yeah. It's interesting to compare it maybe to talk radio back in the old days. And actually, you get a lot of talk radio on iHeartRadio these days. But I used to listen to like Al Franken, and he would do advertisements for Sleep Number beds. And you knew that he had one because he'd come on and say these things about, well, my wife, I can't remember his wife's name, she sets hers at 6, I set mine at 8. Really works well. This is why we love it. And those kinds of things really move people. Whereas a lot of affiliate things don't have lost all that genuine sense within them. That said, I mean, if any listeners want to know how big a deal this could be, I had a client who was getting about 25% of their business through affiliates.
Wow.
And that's exciting. And not through affiliates in general, but through one affiliate. And that sounds pretty powerful. On the other hand, one night, Google reclassified that affiliate, and they lost that 25% of their revenue stream overnight. And it wasn't going to come back because Google wasn't going to reclassify that. So they also can be a risky way sometimes to do business. You want to somehow spread your risk if you're dealing with affiliates.
Yeah, I think that may be generally true if you're most of your revenue is coming
from
one substantial is coming from one or two sources, that's exposure.
Yep.
You have it, but you know, you better not plan on it long term.
It's fun to ride that rocket while it's rocketing.
Well, the company we both worked for at one time had that problem. 40% of the revenue came from one customer, and then they switched technologies.
Yeah.
They, boom, gone, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those kind of things are devastating.
Especially if you don't have a brand. Or
well, even with a brand, you've got the problem of all the startup filling a funnel. If you don't have a funnel full of other people, you can't really very quickly fill that funnel, no matter how beautiful your brand is.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, shall we talk brand week?
We should. Exactly. I was just thinking we should just dedicate a whole week to brands.
That's true. Speaking of brand. So the other thing I noticed is that Ian Pritchard posted a thing, and it's a little bannerish like or Twitter like ad for Brand Week Day 1. And it features Deepak Chopra. And Ian said something about, really? What's going on here? Because I admit, Deepak Chopra is the last person I would think would have anything very useful to offer to people at Brand Week. But I am a skeptical guy there. So maybe people will forgive me for that. But
I think he could talk about brand purpose.
I'm sure he could. Yeah. Only if we remember that Chopra's the guy who was ahead at some sort of very important job at a hospital, but then quit and had been hawking all kinds of strange fake cures since. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of him. I'm not sure, actually, that if I were at Brand Week, that I would think that's a very good connection. It might bring a lot of people to my conference, but I don't think it's good branding.
That's right. That's right. So Wikipedia has him as a prominent figure in the quote new age end quote movement.
Oh.
His books and videos have made him one of the best known and wealthiest figures in alternative medicine.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1990s, Chopra, a physician by education, became a popular proponent of holistic approach to well-being that includes yoga, meditation, and nutrition, among other new age therapies. So on the face of it, all very good, actually. Nothing wrong with yoga, meditation, nutrition.
Absolutely not. But to be clear, I don't have any problem with that.
Yeah.
I think what we read further in that, I think we discovered there were some question about some of those natural cures, right?
Some of those holistic approaches.
Yes, holistic approaches are only as good as they can be.
So I was wondering if he was invited simply because he's a public speaker and they needed one.
I suspect. I mean, I actually have some difficulties with Malcolm Gladwell in this way. I went out to Powell's recently and their marketing section, about half of it were Malcolm Gladwell books. And I thought, he's not a marketer. When Malcolm Gladwell talks around marketing, he has misled a lot of people I would count as clients about marketing because he offers simplistic solutions that don't, you have to be in the absolute perfect place for them to make any sense. But when you read his books, he's a very persuasive writer, superb at it, but that doesn't mean that they're good solutions necessarily. So I was rather frustrated to see him there, but I think we have this challenge at all these conferences that they need big headliners to get people to attend and to drive up.
They need a draw.
At the same time, you would hope that a conference called Brand Week has serious discussion of the really critical things in brands. And those are at odds. Those are things that are in tension.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I mean, these guys are great marketeers for their own business.
Right.
They're not educators of marketing.
Yeah. Well, and even then, I think a lot of them are salesmen. They know how to sell their business. But that doesn't mean they understand marketing as a whole. A lot of them depend on organizations that build behind them that maybe turn it, what they do, into marketing.
Yeah.
I've always thought of that guy running for president, Donald Trump, as a brilliant promoter. I don't even think he's a very good businessman, but he was a brilliant promoter, a little bit like people that promote boxing matches. And so he's got showmanship, he's got all those kinds of things. But that's a very different set of skills than marketing or running a business or those kinds of things. So when these guys headline, it makes me grumpy. But it's going to happen. It's inevitable. So I'm not sure you or I are going to be able to change that by talking about it on our podcast. But
yeah, I mean, there are conferences that invite politicians as a speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really just a draw. It has nothing to do with the conference.
Yep.
It's like, look who we could attract or who we could pay for, right?
Sports figures are the same thing. I once heard the Baltimore Ravens coach talk, and he was actually really interesting in talking about football. I think he probably said something about the topic of the conference, but it didn't matter to me. He was interesting in talking about football.
Right. All right. Excellent. Is it a good time to wrap up this one?
I think it is. I will say it's fall up here in Oregon. We have had our first major September rainstorm. And last night, as the rainstorm was clearing, the sun came out on the leaves that are changing color. So I guess we've arrived at fall. Continues on.
Yeah. And it's starting to have some cool nights here in beautiful Northern California.
Yeah, so we had one day last week that was 90 degrees, and that really pissed all of us off.
But 90 is too high.
I know. We thought that fall had arrived, and then it got to be 90 for one day.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Good stuff. Well, thank you, Doug. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Always a pleasure with this conversation. Always a pleasure to have you. If you have any comments, please let us know. Otherwise, we look forward to seeing you next time.
And feel free to post your red herrings, straw men, and slippery slope ideas in the comments.
All right. That's great.
Right.
Take care, everybody. Cheers.
Cheers.
That's it for this episode of the Marketing Podcast. Every episode is posted on orionx.net and shared on social media. Use the comments section or tweet us with any questions or to propose topics. If you like the show, rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The Marketing Podcast is a production of OrionX. Thank you for listening.